welcome to, if you've come this far, this episode of the podcast is with an author. We have a conversation with an author and a friend of ours, Kathy Cassani.
Kathy Cassani Adams.
We need to
clarify that.
I call her Cassani a lot of times. So
I know, right.
I don't call her Cassani Adams, right? I call her Cassani, right?
Okay.
Okay. you know what my mom would say about you?
What?
She would say, you're a saint. And she would say that because you have to deal with me. Like, you're what? You're a saint.
Patty? Is that your mom's name?
Sally.
Sally. See, I knew it was a letter with two letters in the middle. Sally. Sally's delightful, by the way.
Yeah, she's a good one. She's a good one.
So Kathy Adams, Kathy Cassani Adams, Restoring Our Girls is the name of her latest book. She's written five books?
Five, I think, yeah.
And, you know, I kind of look at our conversation with Kathy. If you guys listen to our interview with John Duffy, where Dr. Duffy talks about rescuing our boys. So Kathy gives a kind of, okay, well, let's dig into what's going on with our girls. And people are just hurting right now.
Yeah.
Men, women, boys, girls. And so we kind of dig into why restoring our girls is so important. We have a really good conversation about that, I think.
Yeah, as we usually do with her. Yeah, and Kathy is a social worker, has been for a long time. These books are largely about parenting. She does Zen Parenting Radio, which is a podcast that you and I have been on, Sean, with her husband, Todd, who is our buddy. Yeah, and the book is, you know, we talk a lot about parenting girls, and we get into a little bit about, are there culture or are there gender differences coming out of our cultural evolution? These are all hard questions.
Yeah, I mean, parenting is hard. And I think in the end, I mean, we're kind of all human beings. And so understanding our challenges and our flaws and difficulties and the joys, let's not forget the joys, is critical.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of joys, you got into this interview with Kathy, your gratuitous Backstreet Boys banter, as you're wont to do, right? Like promoting the Backstreet Boys like you do incessantly. What?
Incessantly? Incessantly? Well, first of all, part of the reason why I do it is you're a music snob. And so anything that's kind of poppy music, you're like, you know, you turn your nose up.
That's so not true, dude.
Turn your nose up to. And we're going to see the Backstreet Boys at the Sphere. Do we talk about that? And the call? Yeah.
I don't know if we did. I don't know if I caught that part.
Yeah, we're going to see them at the Sphere. And yeah, see, you're jealous. You wish you were going.
I am jealous because I really want to get to the Sphere. Manisha wanted to go see the Eagles there, but I think the Backstreet Boys might be even better.
It's going to be bananas. I'm just telling you, it's going to be bananas. So incessantly.
Well, Kathy's a fan too.
That goes all the way back to Billy Baker. Right?
Yes, it does. Billy Baker on the cruise.
On the New Kids cruise. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you, I feel like I was a little bit ganged up on because you knew that you had a Backstreet Boy ally in Kathy and you beat up on me a little bit. So look, all's fair. All's fair. And I am like, I'm not going to turn on Backstreet Boys on my Spotify, but I would go see them. I totally would go see them.
You'd have a blast.
There you go. There you go. There's your daily moment of vulnerability for me.
Thank you. That's awesome.
All right. Well, let's get into this conversation with Kathy and learn more about her thinking on parenting girls and parenting boys and podcasting and all that good stuff.
Giddy up.
Here we go. This episode of our podcast is going to get published after the Super Bowl, obviously. So I think what we should do is we should record two segments where all three of us predict the Chiefs will win. And then we'll record a segment where we predict the Eagles will win. And we'll just use whichever one. Right?
We're so smart. We just knew.
Yeah, we were talking about the Super Bowl and then we got into the dynasty discussion.
We said you were probably rooting for the Chiefs.
I was kind of, but not like in a, ooh, I'm a Chiefs fan, but just like, I like the idea. It's cool when people go out on top, I like that, but it's not because, and I love Taylor, but it's not like I'm cheering for her boyfriend's team. It's just more like I like seeing her at the game, but it helps football. But I think, guys, I think I'm, like I said, I got a lot of Jalen Hurts stuff in my algorithm now. I'm like,
So do you know his co- I mean just very, do you know his co- the college story too, the whole
No, tell me the
Alabama?
college story. Give me
So
more
that
stuff.
so he's I think a sophomore when they won the national championship, and so he was, faved for Heisman and all this going into the season, and then he was playing like crap in the championship game, or was it the SEC championship, Chris?
I
And
don't remember.
they pulled him from the game. I mean, he's like one of the national championship, pulled him from the game and put in Tua, who won the game. As a Tua was a freshman, won the game. And Hurts took it. He's like, okay, this is what happens. I mean, he was just like, this is what happens. And then it actually might have been the SEC championship when that happened. Then Tua got hurt in the national championship, I think. And Hurts came back in and won the game and was awesome, and then transferred to Oklahoma afterwards, because Tua was going to be the starter, and played amazing at Oklahoma, and then the rest is history coming to the Eagles. But such class, the way
Yeah,
he
class.
distributed
I
it.
could feel it. Like, I guess I've watched some of his after game interviews, but not as intensely as I have this week. And I'm like, that's what I mean. Like, the way I just answered, like, the Trump questions, it sounds like he was like, no, he wasn't. He was just really level. And he's like, that's not what I'm fo like. You can tell he's very, if not media trained, just rehearsed, it practiced, and he knows what he's doing. And he just has a good center. Like, I just like him. I guess everybody does.
Me
I'm late
too.
to the party.
Go birds, baby. Go
The
birds. I'm all
birds.
about the
Okay, so are we
birds.
all go birds?
It sounds like we are.
Todd has been the whole time, and I was like, well, I don't know, because the girls, they are a little more, Taylor focused, and I'm, but now I'm like, so anyway, go birds.
Okay. No more birds, no more reds. Kathy, we're here to talk about restoring our girls. But
Yes.
I was just saying to Sean before you hopped on, the last time the three of us were together was at the grand finale, Zen Parenting Conference,
Yes.
ZenCon, whatever. What was it called?
It was
ZenCon.
ZenCon 25, Loge.
ZenCon 25, baby. I want to check in with you how you're feeling in the wake of that. You've had a couple of weeks to reflect.
Well, it's just and as you share those reflections, I'm sure we have some crossover from Zen Parenting Radio, but maybe explain to the listeners what Zen Parenting Radio is before you give your comments. That's all right.
So explain the conference or the podcast?
Podcast,
Both.
then podcast,
Yeah. Okay.
is birth
All right.
the
So Zen
conference.
Parenting Radio is a podcast I do with my husband Todd, and you guys know him. And we started the podcast about 14 years ago. Actually, we kind of figured out it was 15, but we don't want to mess with anyone's mind. So 14 or 15 years ago, and we started the podcast because I had written a book called The Self-Aware Parent, and someone that I had done an interview with it about I had done an interview with someone, and they're like, you should talk about this on this thing called a podcast. And I didn't know what they were talking about. And at the time, I was trying to be on radio. Like, I was doing a lot of radio things on WGN. So I'm like, oh, is this radio? I'll do it. And so I'm like, they're like, but you should do it with somebody. You shouldn't just be talking to, a microphone. And I signed up my husband. He didn't know, but I was like, my husband and I have great conversations in the kitchen. So I think we can have a good conversation about these things. And we don't agree on everything, but we agree on enough that it's not contentious. And so Todd and I started doing this podcast where we were sitting in front of a computer with one microphone. And then, as we know, podcast became a thing where we feel so lucky to be in it for so long, because it's so, there's so many, and I love that there's so many. I do not have a problem with this. I love having all these things. Like, I literally can have any niche, like anything I'm interested in, I can look it up and there's a podcast about it. It's awesome. But we just loved it. And for every Tuesday for 14 or 15 years, we've come down here, and I'm actually in the podcast office right now, and recorded regarding anything about parenting, self-awareness, mindfulness, pop culture. We just talk about everything. And so about 7 or 8 years ago, I had attended a conference called Emerging Women that was in New York, and I loved it. Like, I had such a good experience there, and there were all these speakers who were there, and I loved the way they put it together. And I was like, you know what? I want to do that. I want to do something like that. And I had some ideas, some things that I thought maybe we could do better or differently. And also things I knew I couldn't repeat because they had a much bigger stage and much, much bigger presence. And Todd and I started talking about it, and we did a Remember, you guys remember Kickstarter?
Sure.
Kickstarter campaigns? Yeah. We did a Kickstarter campaign to, you know, fund the first one, and a bunch of people, you know, listeners jumped in, and we had our first Zen Parenting Conference. I think it was in 2015, 2014. And we, you know, it's just a 2-day thing. That was one of the things I decided to do, is I can't do Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but I can do Friday, Saturday, and then rest on Sunday. And, you know, since then, except for COVID, of course, we have had a conference where we bring in really wonderful speakers, thought leaders, and just a really engaged community of people who are really interested in talking about how we can be more self-aware, more thoughtful, or more connected to our kids, or just, you know, have a community that we can talk to about the things that we're dealing with. So this was our last year, which is sad. But I think Todd and I, just like everything, the format becomes, if not stale, like something where we're like, we've done this a number of times. And we've had so many good experiences, and you get to a point where you're like, you know what, I'm not sure if I can replicate what has already occurred. And so I put this book out this year, Restoring Our Girls. And I thought this is a good way to end, where we're celebrating this book and bringing in all of our friends. And this year, Men Living was a real big part of ZenCon 25. Todd really wanted to have more men at the conference, because typically it's been, you know, more like 85 to 90% women. And I think we did that. I don't know that it was even, but I think that there were a lot more men engaged this year. When I looked out in the audience, I felt like I was looking at a lot of different genders out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure felt like, I don't know what it was. I'd be interested to know, but it had to have been at least a third, if not 40%.
At least. I do have a quick question about the origin story, though, yes. ZPR. That's always kind of, I've always worried about or thought about. When that group told you, hey, you should do a podcast and do it with someone, did you go to like a half a dozen people first, and then they said no, and like, oh, he's in the house, I'll take him.
Frantically on the phone with people.
It's easy.
Please,
Todd. No, he was the first person I thought of and the first person I asked, and he didn't even know what I was talking about.
Oh,
and what I love about Todd is, and I don't know, you know, if it's always this way when you guys are doing business and Men Living, but when it comes to he and I doing something new, I'll be like, do you want to do this? He'll go, sure.
Yeah.
Like, he has no problem jumping into something that he's not quite sure what it's going to be. And I think he gets excited about something new. So
he does.
It was so easy. And then it kind of just laid out so well, because I tend to come up with the content we're going to talk about. You know, I will show up and be like, let's talk about this and have a conversation. But Todd learned how to produce. He learned how to, like, we have this whole system in front of us, you know, of like this
sound effects.
Board. Because we both love pop culture, he figured out how to put movies in it, and, you know, and music. And it's just become a nice collaboration. I love doing the podcast with Todd.
And he's got a face for radio anyway, so.
Yeah, it's good. It's really, if the folks that are listening and ever listened to it, highly recommend.
And it's funny because I asked Chris this morning, I'm like, will there be any video? Because Todd and I now do we just use some Zoom clips to promote. And Todd's always wearing like really random headbands. And like, I'm always like, you look like you just, he's not worried about his appearance. Let's just say that. He just shows up as is. It's all good.
That's kind of actually an interesting segue, there being a difference in gender, probably concern. I mean, I say that speaking from a very personal place. Like, Manish and I will be going out to dinner with friends or whatever. I'm like, she's like, you're going to wear that?
Subtle.
What are you going to put over that? But I'm like, I don't give a shit. And not only does she care about her personal, and this is not an indictment of Manisha, but not only does she care about her appearance, but she cares about my appearance too. So, but let's talk about the book. Kathy, how this is book number what for you?
This is book number five.
Yeah, book number
I
five.
it's number five, and the reason why I kind of sit for a second is because the first two books I wrote, The Self-Aware Parent and The Self-Aware Parent 2, were they I self-published them. I made them because I was teaching classes at the hospital here, like new mom classes, and I ran women's groups, and I wanted something that I could give to them because they would always be like, "This is great, but we're not meeting for a month." And I really wanted something that I could be like, "Here's a bunch of essays." Because I was doing a, old school blog. You guys remember blogs and newsletters? They're kind of coming back with Substack, but I've been
Yeah.
writing for a really long time. So I just put all these essays together in a book. And while I'm proud of it from the time that they came out, they weren't necessarily something that I was looking to have a wide audience for. So my first book that I really was like, I found a publisher was called Living What You Want Your Kids to Learn. Which was about self-aware parenting. And it also was an essay book, but a lot more editing, a lot more time. And then in 2020, I wrote Zen Parenting, which was basically talking about everything that we talk about on the show. There's no way that I could like put together 14 years of here's all the content, but here's what we focus on: connection, compassion, mindfulness, some reasons why, some research behind, some stories that go along with it. And so this last book, Restoring Our Girls, is really my most focused, and I love all the books, but this is the one that I really love talking about the most because this is really what I focus on every day is I talk with women. I'm a therapist and women are my clients. I am a professor at Dominican University. All of my students, 98% of my students are female, and I've been there for about 14 years because I'm in social work. So the majority of people who go into social work are female. And I'm the mom of three daughters, and I work with teen girls too. I teach sex ed at the parochial schools around Chicagoland. So this is what I know, like this is knowing what they're asking for from their parents, what they're struggling with. And so while I love everything, I've been more general in my writing, and this one is very specific.
Well, it's funny. I don't not write books because I can't write. It's because I don't know shit. So it seems appropriate to write about what you know.
I know. It's so funny because there, you guys, I've pitched so many books because I've been, and sorry for my alarm. I thought we were meeting at 9:30, so that's my alarm to get on our call right now. I've pitched so many books, and I've tried to I talked about the conference that I really wanted to write a book about, cultish thinking or, how young people get into high control groups and, things just get, agents and publishers are like, no, thank you, no, thank you. And you really get pigeonholed into a certain area where they're like, you can only write about this thing. It's the publishing area is really hard to break into, and it's hard to do anything different. So being able to write just about this one thing, it was some work because they're like, no, write generally about parenting. We want everyone to buy the book, not just people who, are interested in daughters. I'm like, well, I kind of think everyone should be interested. Like I had to pitch it like this really is for everybody,
Well, yeah, I want to go there real quickly and just say, okay, so the name of the book is Restoring Our Girls, How Real Conversations Shape Our Daughters' Lives, Help Them with Teen Challenges, and Remind Them What that they matter. And my first question before I shut up and turn it over to Sean is like, who is this for? Like, is it too early for parents of young kids to buy? Is it too late for parents of adult women? Is it not right for parents of just boys?
Great question. So the real audience that it's being, focused on or targeted to is people who are either working with or raising girls between 12 and 25. And it's 12 and 25 because this is, those of us who have older kids, I know Sean does, and you've got a kid in college now, Chris. It's not like parenting stops when they decide to head out and do something. There's still a lot that they need support with and a lot of challenges that they're engaging with. And it goes past 25. It's just to write a parenting book about a 27-year-old doesn't quite fit. But it's like that, young preteen into young adulthood, But the truth is that if you are planning on having kids or you have daughters already, having this information before you get into that time where they're, you know, preteen is actually very helpful. Like, you know, Zen Parenting, my previous book, is really more about setting the foundation, you know, about how to support your kids and talk with your kids and communicate with your kids in a way that you will be more effective when they are in their teenage years, you know, because that can be kind of a lot of rebelliousness or pushback. And it's like how to set a stage to have it be a little less demanding. And I also, you know, like I said, because I've worked with women my whole life, I feel like, you know, and if you guys looked at the book, there's a lot of information in here about our own self-awareness as women, because a lot of things we do as mothers when raising our girls, a lot of things we push up against are because of our own challenges and our own history and things we haven't recognized and noticed, you know, things that we are reacting from our past or our concerns. And then when it comes to all genders, when it comes to men, I want them to understand these things about their daughters and their wives if they're married to a woman. Like, I want them to have an understanding of the history of, you know, what's happened with women or the expectations or the cultural demands or the societal pressure that girls and women face and feel, just so they can have a conversation and an understanding. So even though I know what the publisher targeted, which was that 12 to 25, I want everyone to read it.
As relates to kids for a minute, in the age group, I saw a quote this morning: by the time your children turn 18, you will have spent approximately 90% of the time you'll ever spend with them in your lifetime. That was kind of depressing this morning, but
I know.
That's sad. All right, thanks. It makes me sad.
Right,
yeah.
Thanks. So Chris and I, when we talked at the beginning of before you got on, we were saying, okay, are we talking about parenting or are we talking about men and women? Or are we talking about sex? I think he said, I'm going to gravitate toward parenting and I'm going to go the other way. I mean, you and I have been having a dialogue kind of about some of this stuff. And for the listeners, we had Dr. John Duffy on before, and he wrote a book called Rescuing Our Sons. And now you've written Restoring Our Girls. And for me, I've read both of them. They're both awesome, as are the authors, as I've said at the conference. And I'm caught in the middle because I think, okay, if I read both of those books, everybody's fucked up. Mm-hmm. Boys are fucked up. Girls are fucked up. We're all messed up. Mm-hmm. And at times it feels like there's pressure on two arguments to, is it the boys or is it the girls? I mean, and so I guess I just want to start with you on, can you understand that? Mm-hmm. And how do you react to that? Because I think we have to be conscious and aware of all the pressures and issues around everything. Mm-hmm. And then how do we systematically begin to correct all the messed upness?
And so, I know exactly what you mean. I feel like I can speak to this. And even though, and I know you know this, Sean, because we talk about these things all the time, like there is a lot in the book too about what girls thrive at. You know, like it is the challenges of our society, but it's less about that the girls are so messed up and more about the response to what the expectations are, which is true with the boys too. Like when things are shifting and changing, the expectation changes, which then they become more anxious, depressed, you know, there's a lot underneath that. But I think that to have a conversation about understanding how we become more aware of each other's challenges, we first have to kind of parse out what the challenges are. And if we speak, like I was, it's interesting that we started talking about my books, because if we speak in generalities too much, like if I'm just focusing on Zen parenting and parenting as a whole, we're missing all these layers of things that are different and challenging due to gender or due to sexuality or due to, you know, race. There are so many layers of things that make our lives different from each other. I mean, that's like the simplest way to say it. And it's less about, you know, at the conference, John and I on Saturday morning, we both, he and I are obviously very good friends and we have the same publisher and we work together and we have, you know, a lot of events coming up together because we like talking about this together, because we agree that this is not about pitting against each other or deciding who has it worse or more difficult. It's about recognizing individual issues, seeing where they cross over and how we can become more knowledgeable in our own families about addressing these concerns. So it's very difficult to, you know, this is like my big scope. It's very difficult to talk about raising kids without talking about, and I'll speak to myself, what it means when having a daughter and what their experience in the world will be like. It will be different than a boy. And the expectations are different. The privileges are different. The safety is different. Their history is different. And so it's that, like I said, as a therapist and as someone who, you know, teaches in this profession, this is what I know and focus on. And I try, and I, you know, try to stay really focused on, you know, with Todd, you know, and Men Living and what you guys do, and being with Duffy, to stay knowledgeable, maybe not the expert on, but knowledgeable when it comes to men's issues, boys' issues. Mm-hmm. So there's not a sense of losing focus on what the true intention is, and that's that we all work together, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things that we need to parse out and understand before that becomes possible. And that's kind of, Sean and I are in this conversation right now, this email conversation about all of this. And I, you know, one of the things, Sean, that I really appreciate you say is, can't we do these things together? Do we have to be against each other? Are we allies or are we companions? You know, there's a lot of, but that's a big part of understanding the history of women or what women have experienced, is that sounds great in theory. And I, as I always say, I love that and I'll be a part of it, but it's been tried many times. You know, it's not like that's a new idea where people are like, oh, we should come together. It's like things like that have tried, you know, have been attempted in history and in schools and in groups. It's not, it's macro and micro. Mm-hmm. And there isn't always as much concern. And again, I'm speaking generally from men about things that are women's, considered women's issues, reproductive rights, rape culture, you know, concern about their own, you know, their own equality and their ability to, you know, go through a system, become, you know, a CEO. There's a lot of things that aren't concerning to men because it doesn't affect them. So we still have to have, women and girls have to have a voice and some kind of, you know, collaborative effort, you know, between all of us, where we are doing the speaking and the working and the, you know, to get this message out, because otherwise no one talks about it because it doesn't affect men as much. Does this make sense?
I'll speak for you, Kathy, but let me share my takeaway and see if this resonates or see if it echoes what you just shared. The idea is not to create this like false binary, like it's easy for boys and hard for girls, or even to rank order them, like it's harder for girls or harder for boys. But it's to maybe acknowledge or recognize that there are differences and then to drill down. Sean, the way I think of it is, if you're coaching a football team, coming back to football, your game planning, if you have a rushing quarterback, is very different than if you have a pocket passer. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's kind of the way I've been thinking of it. Does that make sense? Does that resonate? Is that more or less kind of where we're headed?
Well, yes. And I want to point something out. And because you guys, we were talking about football before, I watch football, but there are a lot of women that do not, who go to business meetings and men speak like that. And they don't understand what that means because they don't watch football and they don't play golf, not because they're not fun and they don't do it, but it's not targeted at women.
Well, for the record, I was using the football analogies to explain it to my partner.
And I'm still not sure what
wait, on, who's the running passer,
who's
Sean,
the running back, who's the running quarterback, and who's the pocket passer?
What's not always, that's not always binary either, right? And which is valuable to consider.
Let me throw this out, because this is always an interesting conversation. When I use the word patriarchy, two different things: what comes up for you, and do you understand what I'm trying to say when I use the word patriarchy? Oh, you know what it means. It's not about, can you define it? But like, do you feel kind of like, like, I don't think that's a thing? Or is it like, no, I totally get it?
Well, I definitely feel like it's a thing, and it's more of a thing now than it was 4 months ago too, right? So
yeah, we talk about it more. But does it make sense when we talk about, you know, that, so I'll use another word instead of diving into that. Like, when we talk about the word feminism, what have you guys been told that word means, or what vibe do you get from it? Because it's less about the definition and more about what culture has told you it means.
When I hear feminism, I think I go to the struggle for equal rights.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree. And it's interesting, what I think what culture has told us kind of depends on what part of culture you're listening to
Correct.
as well.
Yeah. And that's where this gets messy for me as someone who is writing or podcasting or talking about, you know, women's issues or women's rights or girls' issues, whatever it may be, is that depending on who I'm talking to, if I'm trying to speak of patriarchy, sometimes people get very angry with me. And I'm not trying to say something negative about the person in front of me. I'm trying to talk about a system. Or if I am talking about feminism, I'm trying to talk about, as you said, Chris, the desire for equality and the recognizing of the inequality, because that's the first thing, right? We have to recognize the inequality. And a lot of times, depending on who I'm talking to, depending on what school I'm at, or, you know, what emails I'm getting from people who are listening, they get very mad. And right now, all they have to do is just say, well, feminism is woke. Or, you know, that's called a thought eliminating cliche, which is like, I'm going to keep you from saying more by saying that's woke, or feminism is, you know, not real, or whatever it may be. It's like to stop the conversation. And so this is why it can be difficult, because sometimes I'm not just me, but as a culture, we're working with beliefs about what this language means, or that it's somehow personal, that it's somehow about you, Chris and Sean, versus a culture that we're talking about that we are dealing with.
As I read the book, the areas that most piqued my curiosity were areas that are probably more general to start with. And so I'll reserve, I'll what do you say if you're a congressman or if you're in parliamentary procedure? I will yield my time until Sean runs out of questions. Hey, listeners, I started testing this app called Mental in late 2024, and I've used it literally every day since. Mental is designed specifically for men's mental health, and I can honestly say that I've felt the impact. Handling stress better, building resilience, and feeling stronger really both physically and mentally. So every day I take a cold shower, and I knock out a round of push-ups with coaching from a retired Navy SEAL and a former world heavyweight boxing champion. And while I was skeptical at first, probably even more skeptical than I was about cold showers, I've also been using Mental's AI therapy function. It's not meant to replace real-life therapy, but I have found it to be surprisingly valuable. What sets Mental apart is that it's not based on pseudoscience or bro science. It was developed by PhDs in neuroscience and counseling psychology, so it's real science designed to make a real impact. So if you're looking for a way to strengthen your mind and body, I highly recommend giving Mental a try. You can download it using the link in our show notes and get 20% off your annual subscription. I really don't think you'll regret it.
So I think we covered this around the title of the book, Restoring.
Mm-hmm.
The picture I get is when we talk about restoring, that means there's a depletion of something. And really, from my takeaway in reading the book, it's, and maybe this is what you wanted me to get from it, is I was like, okay, well, what's great about being a woman? I mean, being female. I mean, because it's like, okay, I'm reading this and I'm like, I'm not getting, it's like, I mean, the one quote I have, girls already feel as if something is wrong with them.
Yeah, for sure.
So maybe let's start. So restoring, what does that mean in the sense of the opposite of, I'll just say depletion?
Yeah, restoring. It's less about the girl themselves, the individual girl. Again, restoration, you know, is about kind of establishing that foundation under girls so they begin to understand or continue to understand, depending on where they are, that there isn't something inherently wrong with them, that they do, like, there is a sense of right now culturally and sometimes in our own families and just in our belief systems, we are not uplifting girls or talking to them about the things that they deal with or struggle with. Like, I'll give an example that's kind of benign so we can, you know, talk about it more specifically. Like, there's a lot of conversation, and this actually came up at the conference, about girls, you know, girls just need to be more natural. And they worry so much about what they wear, and they worry so much about their makeup. And why do they worry about that? Like, what's wrong with them? Like, why do they care so much about what they look like? And then on the other side of the culture is, you need to look hot. You need to show up thin. If I'm going to like you, you better be presentable. You better be somebody that I'm excited to take out with me and have some, you know, look good for me. The girls that we hold up as being gorgeous and beautiful are, and again, this is relative. I know there are people you could probably point out that aren't this way, but have a lot of plastic surgery done. They're like, oh my gosh, they're 60 years old and they still look amazing. And that's not real. That's something that somebody is creating either through surgery or through filters, depending, on, how these pictures are getting out there. And so the reason I say this is because it's a constant paradox for girls of you should be less worried about yourself. Wow, you are super narcissistic and focused on you. And then when they go out in the world, they're like, you're not hot enough. I'm not going to choose you. Now, that's just one issue. That's not the issue. But this is kind of the paradox that we're always dealing with. Now, why I focused on in the book having real conversations with our girls is there's no final answer to this. Like if a parent was to say, well, then what do I do? You talk about both. You talk about the reality of what girls are experiencing and you don't criticize them or make them feel bad. Like I have a whole section in there about it's okay that our kids want to feel special. Like that is sometimes we're like, we either are mad at them because they don't feel special enough and they don't try hard enough. Or when they actually show up and they're shining bright, we're like, you need to dim that down a little bit. You know, you're becoming a little too full of yourself. So these conversations that are often culturally induced, we need to have them in our families so our girls feel stable. And why they feel like something's always wrong with them. And again, I'm talking with them every single day is because they don't know who to be. They're like, do I be this thing? Do I be this thing? And this is, and a lot of these things are difficult to, well, I don't want to dive into the guy part. I'll stop for a second and then I'll just see if you have another question.
So is there individual work that they can do to be confident in the decision they make to either be X or Y, to be this thing or that thing? Because I mean, from a societal cultural standpoint, I mean, I look at it and say, one of the goofy, I'll call it the beauty industrial complex. I mean, the kind of money that that women that are told to spend to look hot, as you say, is talk about. I mean, there's a long list of shit like that, but that's just. I mean, I talk to my wife and my daughters about it. It's like, You're buying what? You're spending what? And now obviously social media, they're selling all kinds of shit now. But how do you get confident to make the decision to say, I'm either going to be this or I'm going to be that, and through self-awareness or whatever, be good with that decision?
Yeah. Well, most of the time, I'd say vast majority of the time, it's not going to be one or the other. You're going to fall somewhere in the gray. And yeah, that kind of conversation of like, here's what makes me feel good about who I am. Here's the things about me that I like to accentuate. Here's the things that make me feel confident. There are and people, even in my own life of my friends, my daughters and women I work with, it's all, the whole spectrum. You know what I mean? I know people who are having lots of surgeries, and I know people who are like, they went gray at 35. You know what I mean? Like, so there is no right answer per se, but it's about that conversation of why you're doing what you're doing. That's kind of the, if I'm going to speak about my own daughters, it's, I don't ask the question that way, but my conversations that I always try and have with them is, well, what feels good to you? What do you want to do? Is that something you, and a lot of times they're very honest about, Mom, I just want to go to Sephora and buy a few things because all my friends are going there and I just want to hang out with them. You know, it's not always because I want a bunch of crap for my face. Yeah. There's all these other layers of why kids are doing what they're doing. You know, like I even though this isn't a complete, perfect comparison, when I was growing up in the 80s for girls, a really big thing was jeans or perfume or purses. Like I had a Gucci purse when I was 16 years old. Like, why? Like, I look back on that. I'm like, I don't have a Gucci purse now. I'm buying things from Target, and I had a perfume called Poison that only 70-year-old women should be wearing. Like, it's so strong. And I remember I would buy it and they'd give you a peacock feather with it. And I would be like, ooh. And so I could put that in my room.
Real quick, as someone who's close to 70 soon, why see what you did? You just disparaged a 70-year-old woman.
I did. I'm close to it too.
Who might really like Poison. I really like Poison.
I know. Put it this way. Let me say it this instead of an age, an actual number, because you're right. Like, I'm 53, so 70 is not that far away. Let me say this. As a 16-year-old girl, it's something an older woman
Yes.
should have been wearing.
Okay. Right. All right.
Well,
Let me clear
I want
that
to. This is one of the areas where I really wanted to drill down into,
Yeah.
which is this our always comparing ourselves.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite quotes, which I recently misattributed to Winston Churchill, I think it was Theodore Roosevelt, who said, "Comparison is the thief of joy." Where I want to go with this, though, is from a parenting perspective, like we are not immune to that, right? And so, and maybe you wrote about this and I missed it, but like, how do we show up for, how do we model not being consumed by comparison for our kids?
Yeah, I think the irony is we model that we are consumed by it. Like, not consumed in a sense that we can't get out of it, but we normalize it. A lot of the conversations that, I talk about in this book are not about, there's nothing lectury. I'm not a big fan of lectures. Not, I'm not saying I never launch into them. I'm just saying I know they're not very effective. And that the goal is more about the normalization of the way the human brain works and the way the culture works. You guys, we've all gone to, high school, college, we're in the work world. Comparison is how people do everything. I mean, grades, promotions, job titles, like we're always comparing ourselves because the culture is built on attempting to constantly be better to make more money. I mean, we are such an individualistic society, and the whole point of capitalism is like, how far can you go? So we're always comparing ourselves to other people. It's like built in, it's in the stew, we're marinating in it. So the idea that we're not comparing ourselves is ridiculous. That's the conversation we have with our kids is when I'm comparing myself, which I do, here's what I do. I pay attention. I notice I have, like, I say something to my partner or I say something to you, like, why am I doing this? Or I recognize that if I am worried about a job or worried about, the fact that I'm like competing with someone, that I try and do it with the greatest integrity that I have, that I am in this kind of competition, but I'm going to stay true to myself. I'm going to be who I am. I'm not going to cheat. I'm not going to lie. All those, values and virtues that we hold, that I think what our girls need to know is when they feel that competition or they feel that comparison, that there's not something wrong with them. They're not a bad person. It's more how to give them tools to deal with that or to process that. These are like daily conversations with my daughters because two are in college, one is in high school, so they're still in the machine. This person got a 90%, this person, one president, this person, they're constantly comparing. So it's more of a conversation about how we manage it and stay true to ourselves. And that's the restoring part, Sean. Like, how do we make sure we're have this restoration, this foundation for them where they know what they're doing is in the best interest of themselves and other people?
The we're talking about tools and approaches. I mean, one of the senses that I had, and again, back to boys and girls, that the senses that I got from this is, maybe our boys would be a lot different in a lot better space if they were parented according to the things that you suggest for parenting girls.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, wait, well, wait, why wouldn't, I mean, that sounds like a perfect thing for boys that we probably don't do because
Yeah.
culturally we say, well, no, this is what you do with boys. Does that resonate with you at
Oh,
all?
for sure. That's something that, same with Duffy's book. Like, if you were to read about a lot of the issues that girls are dealing with, you would see so much overlap. Like, if John and I could write one of those books, you guys remember those books where one side was a cover and then you turn it to the other side and it was upside down and it was, the other story? Like, this could be a blended story. There's not, it's not black and white where it's like girls are raised this way, boys are raised this way. There is all this interconnection and all this overlap. The only but is that we do have different cultural expectations and societal norms. And even if we don't like that, even if we're like, well, we shouldn't, we should just all be human, it is what it is. And sometimes to shift that culture, or to not be at such the mercy of the culture, we have to first be aware of it. We have to at least pay attention to it. So then we can make a choice about, do we really feel like we need to do this, or can we do something different? And so it, there is, I totally agree. Like all, a lot of these things that, you know, I talk about in the book are things I talk about in the show that have nothing to do with gender.
Right.
It's just, you know, the whole beginning of the book is why girls need these conversations, the things they are personally dealing with, and then applying these kind of, you know, approaches to help them sort through the challenges they personally deal with.
I feel like one area where this, where we have this truism that's irrespective of gender is something you read about, which is the need for parents to be a safe space.
Yeah.
You know, and not another voice of critique. And look, guilty as charged on a lot of that stuff. But like, I mean, and this is key to being able to have conversations for the child to feel safe to have the conversation. So what does it take to give our kids the confidence that we are in a safe space? And does that start at 12, which is the beginning of the target audience for your book, according to the publisher, or does that start at one?
It starts in utero, Chris. Yeah. It starts at the very beginning.
Of course.
It starts previous to having children. No, it does, in the sense that a lot of the reasons that we are critical or want our kids to have or do a certain thing is because of us. It's because of our history. It was because of the way we were raised. It's because of what happened to us or what didn't. It's because of what challenged us or what didn't. And we then view that there is a way to success based on what we have experienced in life. And I'm using the word success loosely. Like, I don't mean success like a high paying job. I mean success like you will be happy in life if. And so we have all these, and we can even call them value systems that we run through our body that we believe to be true. And so as our children are growing up, we're trying to get them to fall in line to those, to if you do these things, then you're going to be happy. Oh, wait, you're going out of line. You're not going to be happy. You're not going to be successful. And we're basing that on, I keep going to my heart, because that's our version of what is success. You know, like, you know, for Todd, you know, I can talk about all of you guys with this, but like, Chris, you were a swimmer, you know? So I bet you really want your girls to swim. Not necessarily competitive.
Kathy, I am a swimmer.
Yes, sorry. I was going to clarify that.
Another ageism.
He is a swimmer. Once a month. Once a month he swims. So.
More than that. Come on.
You Go guys ahead. Then have to call me a dancer and a drummer, okay? So I am still those things.
We'll make
old.
Sure to put that in the intro, yeah. Right?
Kathy, dancer, drummer, right. And I used to do baton too, so I still do that. No, okay. I'm kidding. Chris, you are a swimmer and you're really good. I'm not, no shade thrown. But, you know, you probably, because of your experience, you were like, I think it'd be good if the girls swim. You weren't necessarily like they need to go to state, but you're like, this is an important trait. We're like, Todd, sports, you know, he was like, sports are what got me through my life. A lot of moms I talk to, they'll be like, it was, you know, theater. My kids have to be in theater because that's what made me happy, or dance. That's how they make sure that they have a foundation in high school. And that's all based on their experience. And again, they can look out in the world and say, oh, there's other people who have done that too. But our children come in and they gravitate toward things that are meaningful to them. And we can introduce them to things that are interesting to us. I think we should. As you know, I do all the time. You know, I put my pop culture stuff and all the things I love on my girls and take them to Backstreet Boys concerts. I'm like, love my things. But I also don't expect them to become like me. I want to introduce them to things that I like, but then I also go on the journey with them around the things they like, which has been really interesting. And so I think having that, being able to back up enough, and when our girls or our children, I'll just say, start to go on a really interesting track, we're like, okay, let's kind of follow this and see where this goes. Because the following may mean that they really fall off and hurt themselves for a little bit. Like, I'm not saying that everything is groovy and they're never going to have a problem. They will. But as we know, the issues that our children face are what makes them who they are. It builds their resilience. We don't need to create problems for our kids. That's like my big stop sign, is parents will be like, well, then I'll test them. You don't need to create issues for your kids. There's plenty of things that'll come up on their own. But giving them the space, but it's not just about giving it to them. It's understanding inside of you that they don't need to do what you did. And that even if they're not having the exact same experience you did, it doesn't mean they won't be successful in the bigger picture of what success means, which is feeling content in who they are, appreciative of what they do. You know, it's not going to look like us. And I think that's the hardest part. So you're asking about the word confidence, Chris. That's what confidence is I am me. And when we are us, we are confident because we're like, this is who I am. Lack of confidence comes from trying to pretend or be something different or thinking you need to show up in a certain way to please others.
By the way, there's one of the most fun things you will ever do is go to a Backstreet Boys concert. I'm just
I'll never stop.
It's an objective fact.
Yeah.
Right?
And I make Todd go every time. It's an objective fact. I will never stop.
I buy the tickets.
Okay,
Chris is appalled right now.
Can I put the kibosh on this fucking tangent right now?
It's just, it's got to be said. I think I've said it before. Yeah.
You got to say it. Yeah. Sean knows.
I feel like I'm watching our listenership plummet as you guys talk.
No, we're getting more. We're getting more listeners right now.
I want to go back, quick follow up on that, Kathy. Like, I was also thinking of the confidence that we engender in our kids to talk to us, right? You talk about real conversations. And Todd and I had a recent conversation where I kind of developed a mantra during the conversation, which is 7 good minutes. Mm. So my question is, do real conversations have to be 90-minute one-on-one dinner dates where you go deep, or like how do we build that?
Yeah. You know, it's very connected to the last question, because first of all, to answer your question, just so you know, people feel good about this. Of course not. Like, a 5-minute conversation could be the most amazing part of that kid's day. A 3-minute interaction, a 2-minute interaction could be the thing that stabilizes them to get them through the day. It's not about words and time. See, that's a very societal norm of like, the bigger it is, the better it was. This is not true. Sorry. That's like that feels inappropriate here, but you know what I mean? Like, that there is like this belief system that it's gotta be better or bigger or better. And the thing is that going back to your previous question, the way that our kids feel comfortable talking to us is when they know we don't need things from them, mm-hmm. that we don't need them to be different, that we're not upset with them for being who they are. And a lot of times parents will say, well, I'm really not. It's just if they would clean their room, then it'd be a lot easier to like talk to them. Or if they wouldn't have quit that sport, then maybe I would have a little more time for this. And what our kids develop in that is that this person, my parent, wants me to be a certain way, is not comfortable with who I am. So I don't feel comfortable talking to them about me. Mm-hmm. You know, like in mm-hmm. my book, one of the first, so there's a section of my book that's called Real Things Girls Want You to Know About Them. Okay. So basically I've been collecting these, or they're kind of an amalgam of things that girls have said to me over the years about their parents that they wish they understood. And the first one is let me tell you about me instead of you telling me about me. Because a lot of parents are like, you're my smart one, you're my athlete, oh, you're ditzy, oh, you're forgetful. And we like label our kids to create a sense of comfort about that we understand them and we got them and we get them more than they get themselves. And that is never true. You're never going to know your partner better than they know themselves. You're never going to know your kids better than they know themselves. They know themselves. And our job, or if we don't want to think about it as a role, our relationship with them is about allowing them to be who they are and being interested in that without that neediness. You know, that conversation where they're like, wait, you want me to be different, don't you? You know, you didn't want me to say that, do you? You wanted me to choose something different. Now, again, because this conversation has come up a lot with parents, I understand that sometimes we're like, well, you're getting a C and I'd like you to get an A. But it's less about, I need you to do this and then I'll pay attention to you, and more about, tell me about this class. Is it hard? Is it, you know, do you need support? Are you feeling like you're doing as well as you can do? And being more of a support system rather than someone who is basically saying, you're not good enough, you're not doing enough. Because then all of that, you know, I'm trying to put a lot into one answer, then they're not going to come to us about anything. If we come to them with, if they come to us with things and we're judgmental and concerned and worried and needy, we are the last people they want to talk to. If we're someone who's curious and kind of like, tell me about that class, and we're not like more worried about that A than they are. So many parents are more worried about their kids' grades than the kid is. And I'm like, dude, you already went through school. You're done. you're the support system to bolster them. And now, guys, because we all have older kids, you've probably seen many iterations of kids who have gone through school who have gotten really good grades and were like, wow, they are crushing it. And then they go to college and drop out, right? Mm-hmm. We've mm-hmm. seen kids who have gotten really poor grades who were like, how are they going to get through? And all of a sudden they're settled in school, they're doing well, and they're crushing it. Mm-hmm. It's not always what we think it's going to be. And that doesn't mean the kid who dropped out is failing. It means that that's their lull where they're now figuring out what to do next. That's mm-hmm. life. I did this at the conference. It's a wave. You're always mm-hmm. in a wave. It's not linear. Yeah. But we're so focused on the linear and the success that culture tells us that it's hard for us to allow our kids to have some room to breathe and to live life.
Here's the bad news. I've got to hop at 5 after, and I feel like the time has flown by. Yes. I bought us 5 more before I monopolize the last 12 minutes of our time. And maybe we'll just have to do a round two because I feel
I would love to. I love these conversations. And it doesn't have to be about my book. Like Sean and I have been talking about restoring our girls and women and everything. Like I love these conversations. So just always know I'm open.
Well, if I may, one other area that I've found particularly interesting, there's a short piece in the book about our encouraging critical thinking. Like if you're growing up now, that whole comparison thing that we just talked about is thrust upon you. But the other thing that gets thrust upon them and all of us is misinformation, disinformation, misinformation, bad information. And questioning the information they're being fed is one of my pet peeves. It's in line with sort of one other mantra of mine, be curious, not judgmental. Right. But I've made countless mistakes in my attempts to teach this. So I'll pick May up from school and she'll be like, did you know that Rivian's going out of business? And my instinct is to go, where did you hear that? Where did you read that? What's the source? And sometimes I'm on my phone checking that information before I even finish asking those questions. So A, that's a vulnerable example of how I suck. So I'm interested in how, you know, if you have, you want to talk about encouraging critical thinking a little bit, especially in these days. And also I got to get from you a couple examples of where you learned a hard lesson about how you were doing parenting wrong.
Yeah. Well, we all have those. So I'll start with the example with May. It's a perfect example. And thank you for sharing it because she's coming to you with information. And the first response you have is, I'm going to check you out. I'm not sure you're right. Right. Which is not you being critical of her personally. You're actually concerned about the information, right? You're like, I don't know if that's true. So kind of, especially when our kids are in this 12 to 25 range, when they come to us with information, my first response is always no way. And they're like, yes. And then I'll be like, oh my gosh, that is unbelievable. I have not seen that. Now, what usually happens is they start wanting to continue that conversation and they'll start telling you, yes, so-and-so told me, I read this here. Then we started talking about it. Then I saw it here. And then information starts to come out where, you know, you kind of, I'm making this too perfect, but it where we're like, oh, wait, who told you that? Oh, wait, that source is from blah, blah, blah. You know, that's old. That didn't actually happen. And it's like, oh, so we're in it with them rather than us against them. And sometimes the girls tell me things where I know it, I'm pretty sure it's not true, where I'll be like, oh no, you're kidding me. And then I, on my own time, you know, we'll go back and look it up. And then I'll text them and be like, you're never going to believe this. Look at what I just found, which is the information to them that it wasn't true. You know what I mean? So I'm in it. It's the difference between parenting over and I'm with you on this. Like I'm interested in what you're bringing me because a lot of times they're right. They get information quicker than we do, you know?
And also in that case, you've modeled what it means to interrogate.
Correct.
What you've been told.
Correct. And you are staying curious. Like there is a part of parenting that is, it's not pretending or fake, but there's some showmanship of I'm going to show up in my best way. Like I am not going to, like the way I would maybe say something to Todd, like, oh my gosh, where did you read that? He and I are peers, so we can handle a little more of that. Where with our children, to your point, we are role modeling something, connection, engaging, being curious. That's our role in their life is like supporting them. So there's a little difference. And then in answer to your question, Chris, I mean, every day I do something where I'm like, you know, I say something where my kids are like, mom, you know, don't you know the voice? Like, that's not true. Or we're not going to do, you know,
and I think mom is actually 2 syllables in that case. Mom.
And, you know, and so I'm in a constant state of learning not just because people get very literal about what to say at certain times, what to say at certain times of the day, what to say or how long to talk about this at 3 o'clock. How, like, I'm always learning about where everybody is. Like, I know, like, one really, you know, small thing is that Todd and I learned with Skylar, who's still, you know, she's in high school and she gets up early in the morning and we get up with her, or one of us does. And we'll be like talking, you know, what'd you dream about? And she always has a book, you know, she and May, you know, they're always reading things. And she was like, and finally she's like, you guys, I just kind of want to read in the morning, you know, and we're like, okay, like, that's fine. And for Todd, that was really uncomfortable because he really feels like conversation means connection. And I'm not saying that I didn't feel that way, but I was a little less affected by it, where Todd's like, well, then I feel like I'm just walking around the kitchen. And I'm like, yeah, but that's what she needs. Like, she just needs us to be there. She doesn't want to have a big conversation with us. She wants us to just be around, because if we didn't come downstairs, she wouldn't like that either. Mm-hmm. So it's like learning, like, instead of being offended by our kids' requests, like, go with it, you know?
So is the lesson there to prioritize just being available and accessible?
Being available and remembering that you are in relationship with someone, and that it's not all about you, and that you may be wanting connection in that moment. But if that person doesn't, then being like, well, I was trying to connect, is a very one-sided way of looking at your relationship with them, is that really there are times that are beautiful, that, you know, you jump in the car with them and they want to talk and you want to talk and you put on music and you're in that zone. And then there's times they get in the car and they want to talk and you're exhausted, and, you know, vice versa, right, they're exhausted, right. You want, and that's called a relationship, that isn't like, I'm trying to parent you, take this information from me and, you know, and acknowledge me as a parent. It's more like, how do I show up for this person? And how do I be a presence that is calming and enjoyable and fun? You know, the last thing we talked about at the conference on Friday night when Todd and I did our presentation is, have a lightness to you. Not everything has to be a lecture. Not everything has to be teaching. Like, can your kitchen in the morning be fun? Can music be on? Can you be talking about a movie? Can you be talking about football? Like, we don't have to be so serious all the time. And I think we've somehow put serious and parenting in the same line.
Okay, note to self, don't need to be listening to NPR during breakfast. Okay, good.
You do, don't you?
No, I used to.
Yeah, of course.
Sean, what do you got here? Any other questions you need? I mean, I'm sure you got 17 more.
Yeah, but you have three questions you have to ask. And I'll just say, I mean, my kids are older now, but I'm always, because it's all social media based, I'm always questioning the source. Oh, hey, Dad. All right. What, X? And then it's like, I know it's bullet, especially Lisa. She's the worst. She's always reporting shit. I'm like, not true.
Not true.
Not true.
Well, I'm like, yeah.
I'm wrong. I'm fine to be wrong, but I think my batting average is pretty good on that.
Well, and not you guys, I wrote something today, and Todd and I did a podcast this week about the whole concept of flooding the zone, which was a Steve Bannon tactic that Trump uses, which is to just flood the zone with all this information and basically, like, come out with so many things at once that people don't know what to focus on. And it's a way of keeping people off their feet. You know, it just knocks us down, overwhelms us, makes us feel, you know, ridiculously, like, inept. And what I wrote about today in my Substack is that the only thing we can do when the zone is flooded is critical thinking and discernment. We have to be able to keep our feet on the ground and really be like, what's happening right now, and discern, what can I actually do? Mm-hmm. Or else we're just in a spiral and in this wave. And that's the whole point. That's the tactic. And I point out that it's not just about politics, about in our own home. Like, when our kid comes home and they tell you 80 things that went wrong that day, flood the zone with their challenges.
Right.
And then just to say, wow, sounds like you had a rough day. What thing do you want to focus on first? Or what's the most important? So, you know, discerning, critical thinking and discernment go together.
Kathy, before we get to our free wrap-up questions here, anything else you want our listeners to know about the book, or anything else they should know, period? Go Birds.
Nothing. I don't need to go into any long lecture here. I just, I love this book. I really do want to share it. I like talking about it. I think I love the conversation, especially with people from Men Living, about how we do this together, and that sometimes we do feel isolated, but that we really aren't. It's just, do we see each other's challenges? That's always the goal. That's what I always say to Todd is, can you see where my challenge is? And I will always work hard to see where your challenge is, and see our gifts as well. So, Restoring Our Girls, listen to Zen Parenting Radio, and I have a Substack that I love writing. So, if you're on Substack, it's Kathy Kasani Adams, and you can find me there.
Boom. Okay, three questions in the speed round here.
Let's go.
You know these things.
I don't know what these are. I'm
Really?
excited.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
That means that
she means doesn't
that she's
listen to
never
our
listened to us.
podcast.
That's
She
not
hasn't
true.
made it. She
Guys,
hasn't
I
made
usually
it all
listen to
the
20 minutes and
way
then I'm done.
through. She hasn't. She's one of the ones that don't do.
Yeah,
She's
she
one of the ones
doesn't
that don't
get through
make it
the
to the
intro.
I don't get to
Right.
the end.
Oh,
Sorry.
the
It's not you guys. It's
idiot.
podcasts, period. When I'm done cleaning my kitchen, I'm done.
All right, here we go. Kathy, what do you wish you could have told your 10-year-old self?
Oh, that it's okay to be sensitive. It's okay. The way that you think and see the world is just fine.
Love that. That's a message that my daughter May got at the ZenCon 25.
Amen.
Second question is, do you have a mantra in life or a mantra these days?
Let's see. My mantra in life is, I mean, it's not something I say to other people, but inside of myself, I always say, well, what do you think? And I'm talking to myself. And or what do you feel? Because a lot of times I am reacting from what everybody else needs. And what I need to bring to the situation is, what do I feel about this? Not necessarily to say, but to ground myself.
That's a good one. Yeah, I like that. I'm going to borrow that. Last question here, and again, apologies, I have to split, but what do you hope that people will say about you at your wake?
The simplest thing is my mom passed away and I did her eulogy, and I think I said 80 times during it, she was so kind, she was so nice. And while that can sometimes be used against women, as far as like it's too, like they're being too nice, I feel like I would hope that people would say, she did her best to be really kind. Because that means a lot of things to me, to go out in the world and do good things and to treat people with respect. And I feel like I would understand what that word means. If I was a ghost watching, I'd be like, oh, that's good. I hope I was kind.
Well, and for the listeners who can't see us, right behind Kathy on her wall is a framed note to be kind, like
Yes.
the
Oh, yeah.
constant reminder.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
generate peace and love louder.
Yes. Well, love
Yes.
louder, babies.
Love louder. That's a good one.
Well, we did it.
More
We
to
should
come.
we got to
More to
do it again.
come.
We got more to
More to
talk
come.
about. More to talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, always. Thanks, Kathy.
I join you guys. I'm the third. Okay. I love you
Yeah,
guys.
right. Yeah, yes.
I
No,
jump
I
off
was
the
just gonna
Zoom
say, what?
every Friday. I'm like, hey.
Hey, I'm here again.
Right.
Who are we talking to?
I won't
All
do
right,
that. Okay.
love you, Kathy.
Bye.
Peace and love.
Bye.
Bye.
This is Chris. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of If You've Come This Far.
And this is Sean. Remember to check us out at menliving.org.